My name, obviously you guys know, is Elizabeth Suarez, and I get the pleasure of doing this workshop. It's I'd love to tell you, like, how did I qualify for this just because of the losses in my life? You'll hear about those in the talk. But I have been a professor since 1997, teaching counseling at a couple different schools, at Denver Seminary for masters, at Regent University for doctoral students, and now I'm teaching both master's and doctoral at Argosy University. So what else can I tell you? I told you guys a little bit before, so nothing else, except for that as I think about it, I've had more loss than you know, I'm like, oh yeah, it's been fine, but have lost my best friend, my parents, my grandparent, you know, each one has been a different journey. So I would love to be sitting here talking about some fun topics like friendships and sex and other things like that, but I got grief and loss. So welcome. Maybe one day they'll give it to me, but now I get... Basically, the gist of the workshop is going to be that we all have had loss, and answering the call to go overseas is inherent with loss, with some losses. And the question is, how do we deal with those losses? Because if you just stuff it, and I'll use... How come I'm going in and out? Am I going in and out, or is it just my ear? It's just me? Well, you mean like... Oh, there's a difference. I'd like to take this off if I could. Okay, anyway, that the losses... Am I on? Okay. That the losses... Maybe it's my hearing, because I'm getting older. That's another loss. What's that? Oh, thank you. Thank you. Okay, now that won't bother me, because I'm like, I'm going crazy. That the losses that we have when we go overseas... Well, if we don't process them, you've probably heard this before, but it's like a beach ball. You're using all your energy to keep that, because I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to think about it. If I start looking at that, I'll start crying and I'll never stop. So you use all this energy to keep that underneath the surface. And my proposition, and hopefully through this workshop, is what would happen if you were able to start looking at some of that and start processing some of that grief and therefore have more energy then to put to your ministry and to your family and to the other things that you have. So that's so first of all, it's just acknowledging. The first step is going to be acknowledging our losses. And those losses can be tangible and intangible. And they're on one of your sheets, sorry, I don't know which sheet, but I'm going to look right here on Charlotte's. On the one that says grief, loss, and transition, if you have it, but if not, if you just have a piece of paper, I'm going to look at what are the tangible and intangible losses that cross-cultural workers face. So tangible is you're not living in the country, in your passport country. Maybe let's start there, right? But intangible is that your sense of home is changed, okay? And that's harder to explain. So that would be one of them. Security. When you're in the U.S., right, I have a problem. I pick up my cell phone, which I have with me, call 911, and if they're not there in 5 minutes, there's a whole big thing in the news that they don't answer calls. Now, I don't know what countries you guys are in, but is that the way it is in all of your countries? Okay, so if I have a situation, my house has been robbed, let's say, maybe the police come, maybe they don't, maybe they're involved in it, maybe they're not, maybe they're waiting for a bribe before they can investigate what happened. And so it's a very, so your sense of security of knowing that you're protected, you lose that. Does that make sense? Okay, so I'm going to ask you if you can start writing down what are the losses that you've experienced as you went overseas. So I gave you two. And then I'll give you a couple of minutes and then we'll come back and share those if you're comfortable doing that. Does anyone want to share one of the losses that they came up with as they looked at that? Humor, loss of humor. When you're learning a new language, the last thing to be able to, usually to be able to understand is humor, is those underneath kind of, or even the way. I actually, just the other day, somebody was telling a joke in Spanish, and I grew up speaking Spanish, but my Spanish is not perfect. And I understood everything until the punchline. It was so frustrating because I was like, yeah, got it. I know where it's heading. And then he said the punchline, I was like, I don't get it. So yeah, so then you're missing out on that fun things that you'd have with friends. Loss of humor, very good. Any others? Inability to blend in. You walk out and you're different. You go to the park with your kids and your family and everyone's staring. So you don't get to be a part of the culture because everyone's staring. Good, good one. Celinda, and then I'll... Freedom. In what way for you? Okay, so being able to have freedom to go anywhere, and it's not safe for a woman to go out alone where you live, and so now I have to have someone with me, or I can't drive in my country because women don't drive, or whatever it is. Jill? No, Jen. Yeah. So a loss of patriotism, of being able to talk about what you love about your country without feeling like you're pushing it down their throats or instigating anger towards you because of that. Elizabeth? You don't get to just be you. You're representing your country. You know, that's you're the American. So whatever you do, that's what Americans do. Yeah. And that is hard. That's, you know, I teach cross-cultural counseling too. And when we talk about that, just because I have one person from China in my class, they can't represent everybody from China. Because imagine, you know, how many people are in China and then they feel this pressure. Well, what do the Chinese do? You know, and it's like, well, I know what I do. So you guys have the same thing on the other way. And so she said the loss of being able to connect or put down roots. Can you explain more what you mean by that for you? Okay. Yes. When you know that you're going to be moving every couple of years, you don't have that sense of my space, that I can decorate my way. There was a couple of years where I called it, I did a couch surfing, where I went to different people's couches and slept while I was between jobs. And the one thing I used to dream about was to be able to have a chair and a light that I could read in my own space. Is that funny? That's what the thing that came up. And a kitchen that I could cook my, you know, stuff. But anyway, that's a good one. If you know you're, and it's hard then to engage the next time you move, because it's like, I know I'm going to be leaving in 2 years. I had a gal on one of these retreats who's single and had, I think she said 16 roommates in 10 years. How do you even go like, hey, welcome, but you're leaving or I'm leaving. And then, you know, how do I do that? There's more handouts thank you, Linda. There's more. Yeah. And then I won't know somebody, I don't know who's raising hand to contribute. Yeah, family relationships. Leaving when your niece is one, and now she's 16, you've missed all of that. And I would even add to that, you miss the birthday celebrations, the holidays, Christmas. And then you come back, and they're all talking about what happened with Uncle Johnny when he did that funny thing with the football, and you have no idea what they're talking about, right? And so you get that loss of not even being included in the family jokes, so to speak, in the family relationships. Okay.
A lot of the losses that are being stated as we go, I'm just going to emphasize like humor. I've been in politics,
Yeah. Coming back is also the same thing, you know, that re-entry, which is why they do a lot with re-entry, because you're coming back to a culture that has changed since you've been gone. And, you know, I can't even imagine. We had a lady once, she went through the grocery store and they're like, sign the pad. And she was like, well, give me a pad and I'll sign it. And that, you know, the checkout clerk was so frustrated with her. I just said, sign the pad. And she's thinking it's a pad and pencil. And they're meaning the credit card pad, you know, and that's part of that change since she was gone. Emily? Loss of history. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the loss of history of someone that knows your family member that has passed and knows your experience with them and your relationship with them and not being able to share that as you're moving through your grief. Yeah, so loss of stability, you know, yet having friends that they bought a house and they're living in the same house 16 years later, and you've lived in 10 houses since then, you know, kind of thing. But that stability of where do you find that? Good. Elizabeth, you? Their life is very different, and losing, I hear that so much, losing friendships, not because I don't love the person, because our lives are so different that we've gone, or I shouldn't say losing, like they're not in touch, but it's not the same as when you lived in the same space where you were connecting, you were having coffee, you were going for walks, and you were in each other's lives more. And now you even Skype is great. I mean, things are much better than they used to be, but still, it's not the same thing. And so that loss of that connection with people. And as I get older, even realizing more and more how important it is people that have a history with you, that my friends that have known me since college and high school, kind of, you've been through so much together that there's some security in that. Like, you know me. You know me in all these different phases of my life. You know me before I was married. You know me before I had kids. You know me, you know, whatever it is. So, any others you would add? Aren't getting that. Yeah, so that the kids that you're raising then aren't getting the same experiences you had growing up. And they don't get to see the 4th of July fireworks that we just had with a hot dog, a hamburger, you know, kind of thing. And you're like, oh, I did that every year, you know, and my kids don't get to do that. It's a loss of that, too, as they connect with their friends. Erin, you have your hand up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, loss of ability, or you have to change it. It's like that great chocolate chip cookie recipe that I used to make all the time now goes flat on me, and I don't know, or even to get chocolate chips. I mean, it's getting so much better, but I had a roommate from Costa Rica, and she said, bring me chocolate chips, and so I brought her like 3 bags when I went to visit, and literally, they put 3 on top of the cookie, and that was their chocolate chip cookie because they had to save them because they were so hard to find. And just kind of realizing that, you know. But that's good. Yeah, you have to change. And even what's available in the stores to cook, you know, you're changing, obviously, your diet as much, you know, as much as you're able to because some things aren't available. Was there, Renee? So the loss of the moral purity, and what was the second thing that you said? The community in the culture that your kids grew up in. States are, has, if you ask me, you didn't maybe, but it's gotten pretty bad. Where the kids in the church, you know, in terms of moral purity, I don't know what they're teaching them sometimes. I just say, you guys, living together is not a way to decide whether you're going to get married. And I literally had someone say the other day, well, you just have sex with them and then just sleep with them and just ask for forgiveness. That'll be fine. And I'm like, oh, then where's the teaching on the grace, what Christ did on the cross? Well, anyway, I can get on and on. Okay. Any other losses? Mm-hmm. Oh, so the loss of kindness and finding people that are kind here. Okay. It's funny because sometimes I think they're not very kind here. I know, but it's comparative and relative, right? If you get ignored all the time, you know. Yeah, so loss of support, especially when you're out in a more isolated area, it's you and the family and maybe one other family, and that's it. And what do you do then? I had one girl on a retreat here, one gal, I should say, who her best friend, they were working together, and it was her best friend. And she had said to the Lord, I will go overseas if you give me a best friend, and that's all I need. And she found it. And then someone else moved into the area, and that gal came to her and said, you're not going to be my best friend anymore. She is, and I can't have two. So you can imagine the loss. It's, you know, heart-wrenching, but that was a big loss because now she's like, I'm isolated, and I still have to get together with them because we're all on the same team, but they've already made it very clear that they don't want to be friends that way with me. So having support is a big one. Any others? I can think of some, so... instead of being the ones that are doing the feeding. So being fed in church and even corporate worship and maybe worship in your heart language. You know, I know Lori had talked about how many Bibles in different languages do you take to church, but, you know, what it's like to be able to worship in your heart language. Jamie, and then I'll go back to Joanna. Loss of ease of doing things, okay? Pay your electric bill, you know, could take all day, right? So anyway, and then what is a line sometimes, you know? And who's at the front of it? Joanna? Yeah. Yeah. So loss of belonging, you hear that? You know, I'm in one place, and for her it's Mexico, I miss the U.S. When I'm in the U.S., I miss the country that I serve in. And so you've got, you know, it's like, I know I have to be present where I am, but I still miss, and where do I belong? Loss of control is a big one that comes up. The illusion of control, she said, maybe, not loss of control. But thinking you have things together, and then you get to wherever you are, and it's not as together. And that's actually a good lesson always to learn, because we're not in control. Carolyn? Okay. Loss of security. Mm-hmm. And I did have somebody actually break it for it, so. So even the bars don't even help. Okay. That was one of the ones I was thinking that hadn't come up yet. So explain inability to communicate. Deep. Mm-hmm. And it loses some tenderness there when you're like looking up words to be able to. Even. And loss of language, I'll get to one second. Loss of language is a big one too. I mean, I'm guessing most of you, if not all of you, in the U.S. speak English and can get around, right? But then you get to your country of service, and if you're still in language learning, you know, the dog next door understands more of the language than you do. And you're like, oh, you know, I really am an intelligent woman, but nobody gets that because I can't communicate with them yet. The store is, they talk louder and slower, right? Yeah. Down the street.
And then they think it's worse because they say, where can I find this? And they say, oh, everywhere. I don't know what do you mean by everywhere?
Then people, loss of communication, we'll just say that. And I have to work on this. Just because they don't speak the language that I'm speaking with them doesn't mean they don't understand things. And kind of, I saw that my mom was from Nicaragua, and people in the store, because she had a very strong accent, she spoke English and French and Spanish, but people would be like, ma'am, you need, and I'm like, she understands, leave her alone. Oh, good. Oh, but just, and then yet sometimes finding myself doing that. Oh, they didn't get it when I said it. Maybe I'm speaking too fast. I'll go slower. Okay. This is what you know, and trying to be not disrespectful, but trying to communicate. So there was another. Loss of independence, I guess, in terms of you have to depend on others to show you where to go and what to do, how it's done here. Jill? Mm-hmm. So a loss of health because of the mold and the dirt. And there's another thing that you guys haven't said that I've heard before, and that's a loss of beauty, depending on the country you live in, where there's no green. And so you look out and it's just brown and missing what we get to appreciate here and all those beautiful, colorful flowers and the greenery of the mountains. There's a lot of losses, right? Unless there's anyone that's burning to say another one. Let me tell you some of the ones that have come up and see if I think we've covered most of them. Loss of beauty, control, comfort in the culture. Using your gifts. So maybe when you were living in the States, you were an accountant. And now they don't need an accountant at the agency that you work for. So you get to be the nursery school teacher. And because there's somebody that needs to work with the 3 and 4 and 5 year olds. And you're like, but what about the gifts that God gave me in terms of that? Loss of language, loss of ministry while you're on furlough. So you come back, and then what's happening with what you were doing? I had one lady when we were in Africa. She worked with the HIV-positive ladies that were shunned in her village. And so they would come every day at 10 to get meals. She said, while I'm gone, nobody's doing that. Some of them could be dying. How can I justify being gone? You know, so loss of ministry, loss of dreams, what you thought it would be like on the field and what it really is like. Sometimes we don't want to talk about that, but I had one lady say to me, I told everybody before we left when we were raising support that I love the Malawian people. And she said, I got to Malawi and I don't like them. My husband loves them. I don't. What do you do then? She was being very honest, you know. But, okay, what do I do? Loss of predictability, expectations. Anyway, you get the idea. Okay, so we got our losses. So what do we do with losses? Whether it's tangible or intangible, we need to grieve them. Some of the most difficult losses to get through are intangible, but they're all important to be mourned. And even in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. And the harder thing is realizing that it is a human condition and all of us will experience loss. When I work with my supervisees for counseling, I say, if you get somebody that's in their 40s and they say they've never experienced loss, I don't believe them. That they've been betrayed or hurt, or I mean, I don't know how you can live in this world, in this fallen world, without some loss. So, but it is a natural process, which we can experience afterwards. Okay, you guys are probably done. You know, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross talking grief, talking her. Her stages, right, when you're going through the grieving process. And she was also talking about the death process, but it doesn't have to be just dying, but any loss. That at first it's the denial. You know, no, that didn't. What? We're going to be moving in a month, and we're going to have to say goodbye to everybody that we just spent 15 years building relationships and starting this church? Are you sure you heard them right? Are you sure that's what they said? You know, have you done that? You know, you're like, no, that can't be. Or I remember, somebody was in a really bad car accident in my neighborhood, and someone said, well, I saw her drive by about 2 hours ago. It can't be her. And, you know, you can see that denial, like trying to process, that can't be because I just saw it. Then going into that anger stage of, that's not fair, it shouldn't have happened, why? And that also goes into that bargaining stage, if only. If only we had waited before we left and we wouldn't have had that car accident. If only I had blah, blah, blah. And that whoever said that, sense of control, you know, if only usually is I'm in control, and if I had done it differently, then it would have turned out differently. But that bargaining, okay, and the bargaining also, you know, Lord, if I do this, can this happen now? Can he come out of a coma if I promise to do an hour of quiet time every day? Can that happen? You know, anything. I'd do anything. And it doesn't. And sometimes it doesn't happen. Then it's depression, where you're starting to begin the acceptance piece, but not quite there, of like, oh my gosh, life has changed. This loss, I now have to start understanding that this loss, I can't get rid of it, I can't bargain it out, I can't, just getting angry about it doesn't help. It's reality. And we'll go into a little bit more about depression in a bit. And then coming out of that depression into acceptance. So what does life look like now if I accept this loss? What does life look like in light of that? How do I change? And there's a, I just added two graphs to this and I had a little problem, so I'm gonna toggle back and forth, but I'm not sure how I'm going to do this from here. Do I have to end the show to do that? To go back to what he has already posted? I think I'm going to have to. All right. Anyway, so it's not a linear process, and let's see. Here it is. Sorry. So can you see the graph? I like when people do graphs because I'm visual, and maybe you are, maybe you aren't. But here's normal functioning, and then you're going through those stages and you kind of come up and down. Okay, do you see that? You know, you go through the denial and shock, and maybe you're back up to a little what looks like normal, but not quite normal, then down to anger, then come around, then bargaining, and then as you start going into acceptance, okay? And that's ideal. This is what most people experience. Let's see if I can get it. Sorry about this. Right? My emotions are all over the place, and I can't go, oh, I'm done with anger. I'm now in, you know, the bargaining stage. Because, and it can look like that in one day. It can look like that in one day, in 1 hour. Okay? So just even the grieving process is so non-linear and non-explainable that I think some people are like, it would just be easy. Listen, like I told you when my best friend died, her husband called, she died on a Sunday night. Her husband called work on Monday and said, my wife just died, I won't be in this week. And they said, oh, you only have 3 days for bereavement, so you'll have to take vacation for the other 2 days. Okay? So that in the U.S., and I think other cultures do better with grieving, to be honest, but 3 days and he's supposed to be done with it. He's supposed to be done and now back to work and fully functioning. And really, he's still actually, a couple of years later, looking like that. Anyway, so you get the idea that the emotions are going to go with that. Let's see if I can... See if I'm back. Yes. So I just showed you that graph, And then the question is how we react to that loss. And I don't know how to explain it any other way is to step into it. And stepping into that loss is the way out of it. But it's the scariest step to even go in. And you think you're going to drown. And you think life will never be normal again. And yet, on the other side, there's new relationships. You had your hand up. Did you have something you want to say? Yeah, what I said at the beginning is most of the stuff in the PowerPoint is on those handouts. But I can, yeah, if you put your name on a, or email me and I'll send you. But I don't. Okay, there you go. All the attendees will get the link to this. You're welcome. But there is handouts, too, that have most of it. Anyway, if you're unwilling to face the pain of the loss, I like this from Jerry Sitzer. If you're unwilling to face the pain of the loss, it ultimately diminishes your capacity to grow bigger in response to pain. You start shutting down. And C.S. Lewis talked about it in The Four Loves. If you put your heart in a box and you don't ever let it get touched by anything, what happens? It withers and dies. Only he said it much more eloquently than that. And Elizabeth Elliot, who lost two husbands, to those who receive it, you get a better revelation of the heart of the living God when you go through that loss. So this graph is what is on your one of your handouts. And I like this one because it looks, now granted, it didn't look like my experience all over, but you can see the emotions along the outside, and sorry, I can't see it from here. I have to look here. But you can see the emotion when they're in the shock and denial stage. There's confusion, anxiety, panic, you know, and then going into this disorientation, fear of losing control, and then coming into a new understanding of what happened and adapting to it. And you can see the emotions along that. And then a sense of healing and a sense of new direction. The idea being that it's not where you want to be, but there can be good things that come out of that too. But I have to adjust my process because I can't not ignore that. I can. Actually, I can. I can ignore loss, and I will be seeing you in a couple of years as one of my counselees if you do that, because eventually your body starts showing symptoms of not processing it. Depression is one of them, but people will start having stomach aches. They don't understand, you know, they get migraines, and they start processing some of these losses, and those things go away because it's the body saying, I can't hold this anymore. I can't hold this anymore. So The other thing that we don't do well in the American culture, and I am doing much better but haven't done as well in, is allowing yourself time to grieve. You have to give yourself margins. And so especially going through a loss, knowing what your triggers are, knowing what your warning signs in, and then building time into your schedule. Maybe this is, if you just had a loss, maybe this isn't the time to start a new project that you've been wanting to do. Maybe you need to give yourself some time to process that. And knowing when you're dealing with that, one of the ways I know for myself that one of my warning signs or triggers that I'm not dealing well is not being able to make decisions. I have this inability to make simple decisions, and my friend still teases me about it 20 years later, but going into McDonald's, and I couldn't decide what I wanted. And you guys, McDonald's hasn't changed. Do you want a hamburger or a cheeseburger? I mean, really. And I stood there, and I looked and looked and looked, and I couldn't decide what I wanted to eat. And, you know, in retrospect, I now know. I was depressed, actually, I think, and not being able to process that, but also was so busy at that job that there was no time to even sit and say, what do I need? What do I need to be able to move through this? And so giving yourself that time. So any questions so far? Does that make sense? Okay. So what can you do? What are some of the things you can do? This is what always people say. So now what do I do? I have these lists. Okay, I'm with you. What are some things that I can do? So I'm going to give you a couple of examples. And these are not on your handouts, but I'll give it to you at the end. I do have a handout with these and some other things written on it, okay? So if you want to write, that's fine, but you will get a handout with this. One of them is a collage. Being able to, people process differently, right? Some people like words, like Debbie was saying this morning. Some people, coloring, they'll be like, I don't want to take this out of my hand. This is awesome. I'm really able to know, understand God more through this process. Other people are like, what do I do with this pencil? You know, let me write. Let me just write my thoughts. Let me journal. Someone else might say, I have a friend who processes through playing the piano. And so she plays angry songs when she's angry and sad songs when she's sad. And so whatever it is. But anyway, collage, to be able to do a collage of what you miss from that loss, and here I'm going to say, and this is the hard one, what have you gained through that loss on the other side? I have a loss, but what have I gained through it too? And that's not something to be done at the very beginning. So I'll give you an example. There's four of us in my family, my kids. I am not married and I have no kids, so it's my family of origin. My dad got Alzheimer's, so we lost him slowly, bit by bit by bit. But my mom died before my dad from ovarian cancer. And my mom was the one that, I want to say, a little nosy, pushy, I don't know what to say, but she would be the one that would call me and say, Elizabeth, do you know that it's your sister's birthday today? You need to call her. Okay, now I knew it was my sister's birthday, but then Mom, stop calling me, I know. But she would make sure we all knew what was happening in each of the siblings' lives. So I didn't have to call my sister because I knew that this is what was happening with the kids and this is what was happening because my mother would tell me, right? With my mom gone, one of the gains I have is I have a much closer relationship with my siblings. We call each other, we say I love you to each other, that we were not a demonstrative family. And that all happened since my parents have been gone. And so, now, would I want it that way? I'm like, look, mom, listen, get out of the way so we can have this. No. But through that loss, I have gained a richer relationship with my sister and two brothers. So to be able to look and to think of what are those gains that you've had from those losses. Memory box. After my mom died, I got an email from my cousin's daughter, who was estranged from the family, telling all the things that my mother had done for her when she heard my mom had died. Things I didn't even know. And I put that in a box along with some of her recipes that's in her handwriting. I said, just recently I realized that just seeing my mother's handwriting, it kind of reminds me of her. And so having some things in her handwriting was, so anyway, I whatever it is for you, but put a box of your memories. I have some photos. I have that email that I got from that my cousin's daughter, and recipes, and I forget what else is in there, to be honest, but in a box, and then it's contained. And I know this is going to sound silly, but I can put it in the closet. I can take it out and look at it on my mom's birthday or the day of her death, but then I can also close it and put it back and move on to the life that God's given me now. So that's what I do for a memory box. I have one for my father also. He didn't write as many letters or kind of, that was a little harder. He never got on the computer, so I never had emails from him. My mother, you know, she would send emails all the time. So writing a letter to yourself or God or to someone else, that's just writing a letter. Sometimes the process of writing the letter and putting your honest, what you feel, and it just infuriates me that you took your life and now you will never see your kids graduate or get married. And even though that's not the right thing to say, but you can say it in a letter if no one's going to see it. So writing down in the letter or saying to the Lord, you promised me, you know, I waited for a long time before you brought me a spouse. And now he's so sick we can't do the ministry we're doing and we're going home. That is unfair. Why would you do something like that? And be able to write those raw emotions down, knowing that no one's going to see them. And then you do whatever you need to do with them. Some people have burned them after they wrote them. Just the process. I know for me, the process of writing it was all I needed. Then I could have cared less about the letter. whether burning it, I've heard of some people that have written it and asked someone to mail it to them in a year, and being able to see how far they've come in their grieving process a year later. Or what we did when my friend died is her kids were 6 and 8, and the kids wrote letters to their mom, and we put them in balloons, and then they just sent them up so that she could read them. So whatever, you know, whatever you do with those letters, but that's another way to process. Watching DVDs. There's a lot of, I believe in our American culture, our way of storytelling is not oral storytelling, but it's through the movies. That's how we pass down different things about culture. And anyway, watching movies, because it's sometimes easier to watch someone else grieving than to, you know, I can look at it just the same way with like reading books and characters, right? I can watch someone how they're dealing with a problem and I can get ideas from it, but it's much easier than me being in that, dealing with that. So some movies that people have mentioned, Shadowlands, which is C.S. Lewis and Joy's story of when she got sick. If you haven't seen that, what are some of the movies? Ordinary People. Mary Tyler Moore, this is an old movie. That's an old movie. Anyway, on the handout you're going to get, there's a lot more movies. But in Ordinary People, they've lost a son, and it's the family trying to function with this loss of this son and how they're interacting. There's a movie called Rabbit Hole with Nicole Kidman. It's rated R, so I'm going to just warn you. But it's about what happens to a relationship. They lost their only child. And it's about the marriage and how the marriage deals with it. And they each deal with it differently. And the struggle of coming together. You know. But it's that idea of watching a movie versus, you know, just talking about it and seeing how other people are processing it. I'm trying to think. My Girl was the death of a child. That was an old movie. Is there any movies that you guys have seen that you can think of that you would use for grieving loss? Still Alice, which was a new movie that just came out for Alzheimer's, and Away From Her is another one that I watched when it came out because of my dad. else? Mr. Holmes. So about Sherlock Holmes losing his mental ability, not able to do what he was doing before. So that's interesting. Who had a hand up? That's okay. And getting and going back into that acceptance stage. Now he's passing on to this relationship with the kid because he doesn't have the wife. I haven't seen that movie, but I've heard people talking about it. But that's another thing. Like that kid probably wouldn't have come into his life when the wife was still alive. But now that the wife is gone, this is a new relationship that he has because of that. Inside Out. Uh-huh. Yeah. So Inside Out, if you haven't seen it or heard about it, because, was it at Disney? It was all over the place for a while. But the five emotions have to learn how to work together, and Joy wants to have the control. And she thinks everything should be happy. And she gets mad when anger gets at the controls, and she really does not like sadness. And some of the movies, her trying to realize, and what we're talking about, that sadness contributes to and has a good contribution to make also. But she was like, sadness just has to be joyful, and we're all going to be happy, and everything will be fine. We bought a zoo. Matt Damon, and he has the two kids, and they buy a zoo. The wife has died. Moving on to them. Okay, good.
My bomb was very poor, so most of what I got out of the English part to go to the
of the wife. Yeah, you're not living together, but it is the spouse, and so the loss of that. Yeah. There's a lot of movies as you start looking at it that way. And so, like I said, I tried to put a list together from different suggestions people have given, and I'm sure you can add more. But that's another way of just watching how characters, whether it's in book, bibliotherapy is another one. I think, is it on this page or the next page? Books. Oh, reading books. It's on the next one. But I'm going to say it now. It's watching DVDs or reading books, sometimes watching how characters deal with loss. From the very beginning, we do that with kids. Kids' stories are helping them learn about how to deal with family relationships, how to deal with siblings, how to deal, right? But they learn it through their stories. One book for kids, now that I'm talking about kids, has anybody read Tear Soup? Has you read it to your kids, Luanna? Okay, so she was given to her for her. So Tear Soup is a great book if you have kids, and it's a good book for adults too. It goes through the process. Is it an allegory? Is that what's called when it's a story that tells that has a moral to it? But anyway, it's about a grandmother who has a loss, and so does the grandfather. But it's not as big a loss for the grandfather as it is for the grandmother. And so she's going to make tear soup. But tear soup can only be made from your own recipe. You can't follow anybody else's recipe. And different losses have different size pots that you need to make. And some losses are smaller, and you need a small pot of tear soup, and some are bigger. And so, and you can share tear soup with other people if they bring their own tear soup. And so they can come and have dinner with you, but you all have your own tear soup. And it has all these different things, and it really is for kids. And then in the back, it has a bunch of resources for grieving children. But it's one that I read to the 8-year-old after her mother died. You know, and I always remember her saying, there's not a pot big enough for my tear soup. And we got to the end of the story, and she just looked at me. She goes, can you read that to me again? I said, sure. And so we went back through it again. And I don't know all that she processed from it, but it was a way of accepting that everyone's process is different. And that if I want to say one thing about grief is that nobody follows the same path. And it's okay. And that's why I like one of the things in that book was that the grandfather doesn't think the loss is that important, but he stays out of the picture, basically. He allows her to grieve. And I think that's important of understanding that even we both lost, well, my siblings and I all went through a different process. And that's okay if it takes longer than someone else, than to allow people to grieve and allow people that time, that margin that they need to get over that loss. So that's one book. Has anybody ever read A Grace Disguised by Jerry Sitzer? Emily has. Angie has. That's another one. The subtitle of that is How the Soul Grows Through Loss. And he was in a car with his, his wife, his mother, and their 4 kids. And they were hit by a drunk driver. And he lost his mother, his wife, and one of his kids in that accident. 2 of them at the scene. And he, yet realizing that he had 3 other kids that needed his attention, and yet he's losing that. And he talks about that his story, he doesn't want his story to be sensationalized in that this is my story, but everyone has a story, and just because yours isn't is greater or less than that doesn't mean there's not loss that goes through it. But then what? How do you go through that to be able to love again and to open yourself up to what God has for you? And that's a great book of his process of doing that. He was a professor. I think he might have retired recently, but at Whitworth College in California. So that's reading books. Accounting list of gains and losses. If you don't want to do a collage, you can just make a list. What are the things I've lost through this loss, and what are the things I've gained through that? You don't have to have, if you're not into glue and magazines and stuff. That's okay. You can still process. A list of people to have closure with before leaving. And I put that for people that when they're leaving the field. So who was saying that they were coming back? Oh, she's gone. But coming back from the field. And, you know, how do we finish well? We run the race before, but how do we finish well? I think it's easy to start the race. It's harder to finish. And so how do we say goodbye well? And be able to say the things you need to say, and to be able to close that part of your life as you go into a different ministry, a different calling, a different place. I don't even know if they sell these anymore. Do they have the disposable cameras? Do they still have those? One gal told me she gave a disposable camera to each of her kids and had them take pictures of their world. As you know, what they wanted pictures of. So one of her sons took a picture of his school and his teacher and his friends, and then she kept the pictures in boxes. Now that we have cell phones, I think, but you could still do the same idea. Have them take pictures and have the pictures in a box that they can look at when they're, you know, missing their friends or wanting some, you know, why can't we be back wherever it is? So thinking of ways to helping kids, too, to do that. What was interesting with this gal is she said, I spent all that time, and they got to decorate their boxes, and I gave them the disposable cameras, and they got the pictures. And she said, we have moved 3 times in the United States, and every time I say to the kids, do you want your box? And they say no. And she says, well, I kept moving with them, but she says, I think the idea that just that I have it was what they need. They don't need to look through it, but they know they did it, and that I have it if they ever want it. And so it's kind of, that was interesting to me. Remembrance jewelry. One gal that I talked to, her husband had a heart attack and they couldn't go back and do the ministry that they had been doing. And so they were in a different ministry, not what they had chosen, loss of dream. We thought we were going overseas and we got to do that for 8 years. And now He can't do that. So she got a toe ring. I don't know why. But that every time she looked down when she was wearing sandals, that was her reminder that God was faithful. That even in the midst of this, look what God has done. So whatever that is for you, to get a piece, it says get a piece. My mother was not a believer until her deathbed. And interestingly enough, though, she respected my belief system that she gave me a cross that I used to love to wear. I don't like wearing jewelry anymore, so it gets all sticky and bothers me. But anyway, but that was one piece that came out when my mom died, and I wore more because it was a remembrance of her, and that she had, you know, given that to me, understanding what that meant, what a cross meant for my faith. Journaling, need I say more about journaling? I'm not a big journaler. If you go to my house, there's started journals in every corner of the house, but none of them are finished. Because every time I think, I'm going to start this one, and I'm going to finish, and I'm going to journal. And then you see like 2010, and the next entry, 2011, you know, and I'm like, oh, this is not journaling. So anyway, planting a tree or bush. My grandmother was a great seamstress. She was great. I never bought a dress till after I was out of college because she would just sew them for me. And she would take a pattern, this and this and this, put it together. But anyway, she wanted to sew my wedding dress. And she would say to me, like we would be at store, she'd be like, that would be nice for your wedding dress. And as I got older and I wasn't married, she'd be like, I can't wait much longer. And I said, well, if you're going to die when I get married, then I'm just not going to get married for a while. She's like, no, when you're 40, it's done. I can't do it anymore. I can't stay. So anyway, and that was our joke. But I have never married. So when she died, I owned my first house at that time, and I bought a bachelor button bush that I put in the garden to remind me of my grandmother, you know, because that was her thing. That was her. But a way to remember, I also, in that same house, because my mother died at the same time, I took some of my mom's ashes and put them out there with my grandmother. It was her mother. But it was a great way to remember. I mean, everyone has different things they do, but just kind of a remembrance and acknowledgement of what they've meant for me and who have gone before me. Is there any things that you have done for remembrance that I haven't mentioned that you'd be willing to share? Anybody? Yeah, and the kids deciding who that was going to be. So that was part of the process of who they want to say goodbye to. That's great. So being able to say goodbye and bringing a gift, in her case, bread. Did I see a hand over there? Yeah, that's neat. Finishing up some of the things that didn't get done, then remembering her through that process. Renee? Yeah, so like a bound book, because now you can send all those things, but a bound book or an album that has, you know, things of to remember their grandparents, things of letters they wrote, photos with them, pictures of their house, whatever it is. That's a good one too. Any others? Oh, okay. So, so it was the same idea, but it was a digital memory box, we'll call it. of taking pictures of those items so that she could take it with her without having to take a big box. That's a great idea, actually, and being able to look at it. And now that photos, being able to take photos on your phone, if you do have a smartphone, it makes it so much easier to be able to have those memories right there, whereas before you take photos and once you've got the film processed, maybe you had a good picture, maybe you didn't, but you didn't know that at the time. So that's a good one. No, anyone else? Elizabeth. That's a great idea. Yeah. All right. Well, I have a friend that did that with some t-shirts, and she made a quilt up top from t-shirts. Yeah.
I would love to be able to do that for me.
But there, I'm sure there's I'm sure there's people that would do it for you for a fee, right? Okay, so just like the stone of remembrance in Joshua, you're laying down the stones on the altar and you're telling of God's goodness throughout this process. And how God has met you in that. So I actually don't know what time. Okay, it's 10 after. Is that right? Okay. I said I would go back to depression because I think it's important for us to understand when is somebody just sad and just having a bad day, and when is it depression that it needs to be looked at by, what is it, clinical depression, and that we need to maybe get some medical help and in there. So the six categories, and you have this in your handout, behavior, you start seeing more crying with kids, more anger or pulling away. I remember one of my clients going through a depression, and all of a sudden she started coming in and she was wearing the same clothes she'd worn the week before. Her hair was greasy and down, you know, self-care is not happening. So you start seeing changes like that. You start seeing emotions, you know, things that really excited them before they don't want to go and do when they used to want to do that, or when I used to want to do that, if it's me. Thoughts, hard to concentrate, hard to make decisions. I told you that one. Hard to make decisions, hard to concentrate. And again, remember, this is based on a baseline of what you were like before the loss, so to speak. Because I know some people have a hard time making decisions normally. So then it's even more pronounced with depression. Change in weight, either gain or loss, or change in sleeping patterns or irritability, things bother them that didn't used to bother them. And looking at some of that, and then what is it? Measure? Meaning. Loss of meaning in life. And unable to complete tasks or just kind of this resignation. It doesn't matter if I do it or not. You know, just not having the energy. And what I would say, and this isn't like in stone, but if you're seeing some of those symptoms, and there's more of them in the handout that you gave, more days than not, for 3 weeks or more, you probably need to contact a doctor if you haven't already, okay? It's, you know, we have our bad days, and I can have a bad day, but then I can wake up and I'm, you know, doing better. Maybe I'm not like joy and inside out and dancing around, but I'm like, okay, I can get my job done. I can concentrate, but it's when you're seeing more of those symptoms, more days than not for 3 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks, to get help. One of the when you start hearing things like, well, I don't know if life's worth it. I don't want, you know, it won't matter if I do that or not. Nobody cares. You know, God has forsaken me. I've heard that. You know, I used to believe in God. I don't even believe in him anymore because why would he do this to me? And hearing that for an extended period of time, I think it's important to get help. Any questions on that? If it's mild depression, okay, so we all have bad days, and if a person's, you know, just adjusting to changes, and sometimes it can be good things. It can be a lot of changes in a short amount of time can really be a loss. Okay, yes, I'm excited that I just got married, but I don't have the same relation with my single friends because now I'm married and I have to think about what we're going to be doing. We married, we moved, we, you know, headed off to the field, whatever it is. You've got all these changes, and that can bring about depression. Just like, wait, who am I now? And I have to re-decide who I am. So One of the best things for mild depression, anybody know what it is? Mild exercise. Just go for a walk. Be outside. And I know in some people can't in the areas that you're in, but as best as you can, mild exercise. If you can't go outside because it's not safe, then do some exercise inside in walking. Put some music on. Dancing. Dancing is great, you know, and it dance like nobody's watching so that you can do whatever you need, right, to do. But that is a mood lifter. And amazingly, that can help with mild depression is when it stops helping and you can't, you know, and the person can't snap out of it, so to speak, is when you have to be looking for clinical help. But yeah, dancing, walking, you don't have to run a marathon to get benefit from exercise for depression. Okay, even just going outside and walking around the block. And research is showing now that it doesn't have to be consistent. If they're saying now, you know, you should have 30 minutes to 60 minutes of exercise, I think 3 to 4 days a week. But they're saying if you're doing 30 minutes a day and you do 10 in the morning, 10 at lunch, and 10 at dinner, that's the same as 30 at once. And so, with my life, so I've started to, like, when I have to go to the bathroom at work, I go down 2 flights of stairs, go to that bathroom, and come back up. Just to get a little bit, you know, get those steps in, you know, a lot of, now, again, with these, I don't have this, but somebody was just telling me there's an app that map my walk. And then you can, you know, all the walking you do, is it you telling me, Lori or Bethany? So you just, like right now, I'm getting steps in. Yeah, I'm getting my exercise just talking to you guys. But I don't have my cell phone on, so it's not talking. But anyway, that you can get your 10,000 steps in is what they say normal, which is about 4 miles, actually. And but, you know, if the idea for you is I'm going to walk 4 miles and I'm leaving right now, I'll be back in 4 miles. That's not something you should be doing just when you've been doing no exercise. But if you could do, hey, how far can you go and then come back? And then tomorrow a little bit farther, and you can get your, that mild exercise is important. Whatever, and of course, I don't need to tell you this, whatever you enjoy, you know, because if you're doing exercise that you hate, you're not going to keep doing it. That's just common. Okay, we don't have time to do Psalm 88, but I'm going to give you a homework assignment. And sometime when you have time in the next couple of days, I want you to read Psalm 88. And I want you, because see, I'm a professor, you have to prove your answer. So I want you to decide as you read Psalm 88, is the worship leader going through a hard time, or do you think they're clinically depressed? But you can't just give me that answer. You have to have data from the psalm that would support your answer. And there might be candy involved if you give me your answer. But anyway, if we had had time, I would have had to do it as a group. But it's interesting to watch because there's places where he says, like, I have been crying on my bed day and night. All my friends have left me. You know, so you'll see. I'm not going to give you hints. But anyway, Psalm 88. But you can see also, here's examples of other losses in Scripture. Elijah on the Mount of Carmel. You remember the story in 1 Kings? 19, they've mocked him, they've made this big pyre, the pagans, the prophets of Baal have, you know, tried everything and nothing happens, and Elijah comes up and he goes, pour water on it. Okay, now, let me pray, and the fire licks up all the water in the moat and the pyre's gone. And he rejoices and said, that was my God. Isn't that how it ends? And he says, yes, that was my God. Did everyone see God work? And he goes, he doesn't, right? He goes and says, God, where were you? I'm the only one that serves you. And the Lord says, what? There's 450 other, you know. But just that he goes into that depression of feeling this aloneness. And it's interesting because God feeds him and gives him rest, right? And sometimes that's what we need too when we're going through depression. But that interesting, I like that story too, and I'll mention this. There's some volunteers in here, but when we do debrief, that a lot of times when you've had a spiritual high, like Elijah had, you have to be careful of that down on the other side, because that can really throw people off. Job, Gosh, you want to talk about loss? There's the book of Job. So the Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away, but blessed be the name of the Lord, and everyone giving him suggestions, but how he dealt with loss. Jonah. Jonah had a little hard time getting to where he needed to go. Okay, let's just say. But he gets there. And what happens? He says, okay, first of all, they are pagans. Are you sure you want me to preach? And he does for 3 days through the city, right? That they, ashes, sackcloth, all the people, even the cows are in sackcloth and ashes because they're repenting for what they've done. This is what he writes in his support letter back home, isn't it? Look at all the things God has done. No, what does Jonah do in chapter 4? He goes and sits under a plant that has one leaf, and then he's mad because he has shade or doesn't have shade. We very rarely read that part of the story, right? In all the kids' videos, they don't ever see the end of it. They see Jonah finally, he gets in the whale, but he finally gets to where he's going, and everybody repents and everyone's happy. But you see that depression there too. He's so focused on just himself and what he needs and not being able to see all that God has done through him. And that's another thing of that focusing on self and not being able to see the big picture that you see with depression. Anyway, anyone add to any of that? Into depression. I think that's good to talk about, and I didn't address, and that is that your brain chemistry can change in depression, and so sometimes the only thing that can help switch that is antidepressants. And I know that in some places people have felt like if I take an antidepressant, I'm not trusting God. But we don't say the same thing for a diabetic that's taken insulin, do we? And if you think about it, if my brain chemistry has changed and I need to take that, then take it and help correct that brain chemistry so I can move forward. And sometimes that's what that's needs. So, yeah, because the serotonin, which is the feel-good hormone, gets absorbed into the body at a fast rate when you're in depression. And so the SSRIs are the ones that they inhibit that absorption so that they can stay and have the mood lifters that they are. So, desires, you know, what we can do about loss, accepting the reality of my loss, giving myself permission to experience that, this kind of similar, summarizing kind of what we've been talking about, right? Adjusting to my new environment without the thing that I'm grieving. I'm now getting, as I grieve, I'm now getting more emotional energy. How do I reinvest that? And then learning how to redefine my roles and relationships now that I have processed that grief. What does it look like now? What do I do? And so, again, it's not linear. It's unpredictable, and you can be in different stages. And what I would say is allow yourself the freedom to grieve. Allow others the freedom to grieve, even if it's not the same as, you know, you're like, okay, I'm over that. Even if that's your experience, allowing others to have that. And that allowing God to be with you in that. And Jerry Sitzer, again, from that book that I said, How to Grow Through Loss, I'm going to read this quote because I found this one helpful. He says, further loss is a fear. Therefore, it poses a dilemma. The problem of choosing to love again is that the choice to love means living under the constant fear of further loss. If I love again, I could lose again. Why would I do that? And he says, but the problem of choosing not to love is that the choice to turn from love means imperiling the life of the soul. For the soul thrives in an environment of love. Soulful people love, soulless people do not. So given that, he says, if people want their souls to grow through loss, whatever that is, they must eventually decide to love even more deeply than they did before. They must respond to that loss by embracing love with renewed energy and commitment. It's if we're going to grow through that loss, we're going to have to take that loss and risk again, basically. Risk that love again, and even in a deeper way. Even in a deeper way. So, like I said at the beginning, integrating our losses, if we're able to bring those losses to the surface and process them the way we've been talking about, then we can move forward in a healthy manner, and we're going to have more energy to reinvest into things that God has given us and called us to do, into the ministry that you have, into your families, into your relationships. You will have more energy, but it's going through that, and there will be a time when you have less energy and you'll think, oh my gosh, I wish I hadn't done this. That was a mistake. I shouldn't have taken the lid off of that. But if you continue to go deeper, you'll come up on the other side. You have to trust me on that. At the time, it feels like, no, I can't. I can't do one more thing. I don't have it in me. I just want to stay in bed. I just want to curl up. So those who mourn will be given beauty for ashes and the oil of joy for mourning. And say, I'm going to cry. The garment of praise for the spirit of heaviness. And you'll be called trees of righteousness, the planting of the Lord, that he may be glorified. And that's my wish for all of you. Thanks for coming. If you have any questions, I'll take questions. And I want to be respectful of your time. So.